I'm John Kroll. There's a new home opening for LGBTQ youth in Indianapolis. Today on No Limits, we will talk about the homelessness and rejection young people who are LGBTQ often face. My guests are Jenny White, Trinity Haven's founding executive director, Chris Paulson, CEO of Indiana Youth Group, and Trinity Haven board members Sarah Al-Rajabi and Leanne Hirschman. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about a new home that's going to be opening for LGBTQ youth in Indianapolis. More broadly, we're going to talk about the challenges that make that home necessary and a response, really, to a need. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are Jenny White. She is Trinity Haven's founding executive director. Chris Paulson, who is the CEO of Indiana Youth Group. And Trinity Haven board members Sarah Al-Rajabi and Leanne Hirschman. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Certainly. I guess in Chris's case, it's welcome back, but since she's been on the show,
thank you.
Show before. So I'll start with you, Jenny. Tell me about what Trinity Haven is.
Trinity Haven is a new organization here in Indianapolis that will provide transitional housing to LGBTQ youth who are ages 16 to 21, who don't have a safe place to stay.
And, you know, when is it coming online, or has it already come online?
Well, we're working towards that now. There are several moving pieces that we're navigating in order to open. We hope that we can open this summer, but we are dealing with some renovations to the house itself and an application for licensure because we'll be working with the Department of Child Services, or DCS.
Chris, why is a place like this necessary?
Unfortunately, in Indiana, one in four youth who come out to their families get thrown out onto the street. So Indianapolis last year had 2,241 youth on the street during the year, and about 30% of those are LGBTQ. So we're looking at about 800 LGBTQ youth on the streets of Indianapolis. It's very unfortunate. It's part of the climate we live in, and that is why Trinity Haven is necessary and why IYG has a growing basic needs program to also help address the need of food and clothing, showers, basic needs for those youth.
So Sarah, Leanne, or Jenny, any one of you, of those 800, how many is Trinity Haven going to be able to serve?
Well, our home will be equipped to serve 10 youth at a time. So we will have 10 bed spaces available, and those youth will be able to stay up to 2 years, depending on what their needs are in order to achieve or be closer to self-sufficiency and independence to move forward after a program like ours. So 10 at a time, and we will up to 2 years, depending on how long they need.
And is there a cost for the youths who are staying there, is it something?
Absolutely not.
Okay. So I suspect this is where the board members come in, because they've got to help make sure that the bills are paid if the people who are staying there can't. Leanne, why don't you talk with me a little bit about why you got involved with this?
Sure. So I became involved as a member of Trinity Episcopal Church, which founded and incubated Trinity Haven. To give you the backstory, Trinity Haven began back in 2016 when Trinity Episcopal Church, which is a welcoming and affirming church in Midtown, was looking for the best and highest not-for-profit use of a vacant home on its campus. We have several other not-for-profits that we've incubated or housed. And we decided to form a team. I was on the team to start talking to community leaders and neighbors about possible needs that we could maybe fill through the house. At that same time, Indiana Youth Group announced that it was moving its new headquarters just around the corner from us. And we began conversations with Indiana Youth Group as well. And in those conversations, we learned both data about the percentage of young people experiencing homelessness who identify as LGBTQ. Mm-hmm. We learned that between 40 and 60 kids come to IYG each month who aren't sure that they have a safe place to go. And there's more data, but as compelling as the data is, we also heard some stories. Mm-hmm. For example, we heard about a young boy, we call him Colin, who told his parents one night at dinner, he took a deep breath and said, "Mom, Dad, I've got something to tell you. I think I'm gay." And the next day, Colin was homeless with nothing but a small bag of his belongings. We heard about a young person who doesn't really identify either as male or female, who was seeking shelter and went to a shelter and was told by a compassionate, caring staffer that this person, because they didn't identify as either male or female, probably wouldn't be safe mm-hmm. in either the men's portion of the shelter or the women's, and who therefore fled and who was then sexually assaulted multiple times on the street. And we heard about young people who, without homes, do not feel confident that they will find safety and acceptance in any of the existing options, and who therefore seek out the safest, cleanest, best-lit park bench they can find. And that's how Trinity Haven was born. Ultimately, the home we had on campus didn't move out, but we moved to a bigger and better home closer to IYG. Trinity Haven is now its own 501c3. And it's not a faith-based organization. There are no religious requirements for the young people.
I'm going to interrupt just for a second for those who do not speak tax code fluently. 501c3 means you can make charitable contributions to it, and they are tax deductible.
Absolutely.
So, Sarah, your story, how did you get involved?
So I was one of those youth that have experienced homelessness. Mm-hmm. I was a IYG youth, and I had nowhere to go. So when I heard about Trinity Haven, this program that was in infancy, something that was coming on board, I knew that I wanted to be a part of it because I was in a place that I was able to give back. I was in a place that I could share some of my experiences, some of these things that were negative and mm-hmm. some of the positive stuff. And I wanted to be there to help provide some feedback and make sure that the process was taken into consideration through a person with lived experience and through the lens of someone who was, a mm-hmm. youth, was LGBT, and was, like a lot of times people with lived experience say, nothing about us without us. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to make sure that that was completely true about Trinity Haven. And I think that with me being there, I'm able to talk to the individuals who may be a part of Trinity Haven and talk to the board and talk to the staff and talk to everyone who is going to be a part of it and be that middle person. Mm-hmm. And I really like to be that.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the opening of Trinity Haven. It's a home for LGBTQ youth who are homeless here or don't have a place to stay here in Indianapolis. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a listener named David has done and send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. David writes, My daughter, who might be gender fluid, is a perfect example of LGBT youth in Indiana. For pronouns, she prefers they or their instead of she and her. We are very open-minded at home, so she didn't have any problem coming out to us as a lesbian. However, we didn't have advanced resources to help her deal with issues she faces socially. However, through some research, we found out that Indiana Youth Group has a regular get-together on Friday nights that was open to any LGBT youth. Parents are not allowed to stay in the building while their child is there. There is adult supervision, but not from the parents of the children that are there. My daughter has been three times now, spending several hours each Friday there, and on the way home last time told me she now has 16 moms in the building that are trying to help her understand her LGBT issues. IYG is something that needs to be more widely broadcast out there so the LGBT youth know they have somewhere safe to go, at least in Indianapolis. I'll let you acknowledge, obviously, the kind compliments there, Chris, but I want to talk with sort of the last place, the importance of having a place to go, his last point.
Yes,
there.
Thank you, David. Those words are very affirming, and those are stories that we're glad to hear from many, many youth and their parents.
But speak to what is his last point, which I think is the real poignant one, which is these kids need to have a place to go. It's
definitely
that simple.
And that is the main focus that IYG tries to provide, is a safer space for youth to be their authentic selves. We know a lot of times in schools, churches, and even at home, these youth are not accepted for who they truly are. And the unfortunately, the suicide rates in Indiana for LGBTQ youth are astronomical. We're second in the nation in youth who consider suicide. And that is because of how these youth are treated. So IYG is there to provide a safer space that these youth can be themselves, even if it's just for a couple hours on a Friday night.
Sarah, I'm going to ask, because you were one of these young people, to the degree that you are comfortable, could you share your story?
I was going to say, when I was a youth at IYG, I used to joke that IYG was my home. Even though I couldn't, you know, sleep there or stay the night, I would spend as much time as I could there. And I found family there. I found some of my best friends at IYG. And
what brought you there in the first place? I'm sorry to interrupt, but what brought you to IYG? How did you find out about it? And
When I was in high school, there was a few kids that went to IYG, and I went on their website, and I just looked it up to see what it was about, and I told my parents that there was this place that I wanted to go to, and my parents were like, no, you can't go there, that's not a good place, so I snuck out and went, and it was definitely one of the most affirming, most exhilarating things that I've ever done. Mm-hmm. And I really, I loved it. And when I turned 18, I made it my home. I would stay there until it was closing time, and then I would stay back until they were like, you really need to go. Mm-hmm. And then I would just find a place to go and drift until it was opening day the next day.
What was it about IYG that you found so comforting and so affirming? Trying to get at the, you know, there obviously was a deep hunger for some sort of connection in your life there. Could you speak to that a little bit?
I didn't have to explain myself when I was at IYG. I was just me, and there was no real expectation to be anything but me. And I think that that's really what drew me to it, what brought me back. And because of not having to explain myself and being able to be me, I was accepted and I was loved for that. And that's what I needed and what I wanted. And I think that through IYG and through the relationships that I made, I was able to continue my life and not be in a place where I just continued to live.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about Trinity Haven, a new home for LGBTQ youth in Indianapolis who are facing rejection at home and or homelessness. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Jenny White, who is Trinity Haven's founding executive director, Chris Paulson of Indiana Youth Group, and Trinity Haven board members Sarah Al-Rajabi and Leanne Hirschman. We will be back shortly. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about Trinity Haven. It's a new home that is opening for homeless LGBTQ youth here in Indianapolis. My guests are Jenny White, who is Trinity Haven's founding executive director, Chris Paulson, who's CEO of Indiana Youth Group, and Trinity Haven board members Sarah Al-Rajabi and Leanne Hirschman. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So, Chris, I'm going to throw this at you. Obviously, the numbers we heard in the last segment, that there are 800 LGBTQ youth basically at any time who are on the streets. Trinity Haven will deal with 10 of those kids. What are we going to do with the other 790?
That's a great question. And that 800 youth is over a period of a year.
Okay.
And Trinity, hopefully some of the youth will get what they need and become self-sufficient faster than a year. So Trinity might serve more than 10 youth in a year, but it does leave a huge number of youth who are unserved and underserved.
Suppose they're phenomenally successful and they deal with 50 or 60.
Yeah.
That's still a big problem.
It's a huge problem, and it's a problem that Indianapolis doesn't talk about. We don't talk about homelessness, and we specifically don't talk about homeless youth. It is something that we're trying to shine the light on, and people just don't realize that it's out there. Youth are very good at hiding. They don't want to get caught up in the system, so they remain vigilant. They'll sleep in the library during the day and stay awake at night so they're safe on the streets. We have youth who sleep in bathrooms in hotels because it's safe and warm and dry. And youth who don't always make the best choices because that's what they're forced into. So I think it's very important if we want to raise productive citizens who become adults. We need to really look at this issue and address it before these youth become chronically homeless, because then it becomes a much more expensive issue to fix.
Does it bother you? I was going to go with a question to Leanne, but I'm going to stay with you for just a second, because I can see, I was watching your face, and obviously the audience can't see this. You know, at the end, you're advancing an economic argument that it becomes more expensive, but I'll betray my own prejudices or biases here. When we're talking about kids, the money shouldn't be the primary consideration. I mean, the fact that we have these alarming suicide rates and we have got young people at the start of their lives who are in states of despair should be the driving consideration in all of this. How do we deal with that?
It should be the driving issue. And unfortunately, economics drives a lot of our state in many issues. But, we are losing youth on a daily basis because they are denied housing or are housing insecure. Those youth become despondent, as would anyone, when you don't have a stable place to live or can't be enrolled in school because you don't have the correct ID. It just spirals downward with each hurdle that they come up against. So we need to look at a lot of different systems. I know the state is looking at Department of Child Services. There's people there who do great work. It is massively underfunded. And those are the future Hoosiers that we're dealing with. We are not funding that enough to take care of the children of this state that we hope that will grow into productive adults. We are losing a generation.
Leanne, in terms of sort of the institutional hope for the church, I mean, obviously, you can do the math that we were talking about here and realize that 10 out of 800 is, you know, I guess is a step on a much larger journey, but it's not the journey itself. Is there a hope that the Trinity Haven will expand or at least prove to be a pilot for other efforts or attempts to deal with this?
Absolutely, and thanks for asking the question. So yes, Trinity Haven has some capacity to expand, and we're hoping to become a pilot for other projects, not just in Indiana, but also throughout the country, because we're planning to be the best home like this in the country and to have a model that can serve as a model for other homes. And we also are hoping that by starting Trinity Haven and by bringing awareness to the issue on wonderful programs like this, that perhaps perhaps there will be less need because people will become more aware of what happens when kids are out on the street. And perhaps we'll find other folks who are willing to step up and help.
I think that's a cue for Jenny to deliver the URL. If people want to support Trinity Haven, where do they go to do it?
Thanks so much. The easiest way to support Trinity Haven right now is by visiting our website, which is www.trinityhavenindy.org. And there is lots of information there. There's also a very easy way to make a financial contribution that is tax deductible. Mm-hmm. Those any size, one-time gifts or recurring monthly gifts can help us open, stay open, and also help the youth know that they are supported by people they may never meet, but know that for all of the rejection they felt in their lives, there are people in the world that will put their money behind their feelings towards supporting and welcoming and affirming these youth so that they will become productive adults participating in the community.
Or just happy ones.
Exactly, exactly, ones. Exactly.
So to give us an idea of what the budgetary needs are for something like this, I mean, how much money is required to do this?
Well, we're in the middle of a campaign right now to get us not only open but sustained for the first 3 years of our existence. So we're in the middle of a $1.5 million campaign. We're not quite at $1 million yet, so we're looking for that wonderful gift to push us right over the edge so that we can turn that into more gift giving along the way. But that $1.5 million will take care of all of the renovation and capital needs that we need to get the building up and running. It will take care of the capacity building for the staff to come on board and be fully trained and vetted so that they are ready, willing, able to take on whatever the needs are of the youth, and then also have 3 years of operating expenses secured outside of federal or state funding that we are hoping to acquire.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about Trinity Haven. It is a new home for homeless LGBTQ youth in Indianapolis that will be opening soon. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So, Sarah, I want to come back to your story because it seems like that is almost the allegorical one here, the everyman kind of or every woman kind of experience in this case. You said you had to sneak out, you know, with because your parents didn't want you to go to IYG. Did they ever find out that you were going there, and what was their reaction? Are you comfortable talking about that, or?
So when I eventually told my parents about myself and I came out, I told them that I had been going to a youth group that helped me figure out who I was, and that I kind of came out and I said, you know, I'm not straight, but I'm not gay. I'm just me. And that's sort of what IYG helped me figure out. And I told them that I was in love with someone and that, you know, they may not like who I'm in love with. And they asked me, you know, what IYG was when, like, and they asked me to take them there. Mm-hmm. But I refused. And then that's when they officially, you know, said, you have to go, you know, because they wanted to sort of control exactly where I was going, what I was doing. And I really just wanted to define who I was by myself. And I knew that them going to IYG would have been something that wasn't very pretty. So I just didn't let that happen. But now I think now that I'm older and I'm more mature, I have been able to talk with my parents sort of in a more controlled environment where I'm able to, you know, walk away safely and explain to them, you know, what LGBT means, what I am. And they are more accepting. Mm-hmm. In terms of, like, I don't necessarily like what it is, but I still am okay with it. I still love you. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure that them going to IYG would have been a good thing.
I'm going to continue asking questions, but if they do get too intrusive, I'm going to count on you to respect me enough to tell me that. Okay.
Of course.
All right. And how old were you when they told you you had to go? By go, do you mean leave home, leave the house?
Yes.
How old were you?
So the first time I was 17.
Okay. Okay. Again, this is one of those questions that risks, and I know I'm asking you to talk about things that are difficult. I appreciate your candor with this. That had to have hurt.
Yeah. After that, I went to a homeless shelter, and there was some things that didn't really work out. I have some mental health stuff along with, you know, everything else, and I just didn't work out, so I just sort of drifted. I ended up going back home, and it was just a lot of, like, arguments and fighting and just my parents trying to get me to be someone that I'm not. And so once I turned 18 officially, I had a true reason to go, and I wasn't, like, hiding from, you know, the courts, and I didn't risk going to DCS. So, you know, the first time I went back home, it was more of an obligation. You know, I have to be home or I'm going to be, you know, risk juvie or mm-hmm. risk being in DCS. And I think I would have rather been with someone I knew than somebody random.
Thank you for talking about that. I know that can't be easy to relive, and I really do appreciate the honesty with which you've shared your story. Sadly, Chris and Jenny, Sarah is not the only case in which this happens. Chris shook her head first, so I'll go with her, but I'll let Jenny weigh in, too.
No, it's definitely not. last year in the 10 months that we did basic needs services at IYG, we served 157 youth that were homeless or experiencing housing instability, which means that they're doubled up or staying with a adult who maybe is not the best place for them to be. So it's Sarah's story is not uncommon, mm-hmm. Definitely. And we hear that story over and over again, that the parents don't understand and say, you've got to go, rather than taking the time to learn who their child truly is.
Jenny, I'll let you weigh in, too, because you shook your head about a millisecond after Chris did.
I appreciate that. Most Certainly. Of the experience that I have is through the conversations that we're having with IYG as a collaborative partner in the programming that we'll be doing at Trinity Haven. And so understanding everything that both Chris and Sarah have already shared and the stories that Leanne heard through the creation of this process is why we are here and why we're opening just as soon as possible. But what I'd love to tie together is the partnership and the collaboration with IYG, and that they are the experts in the service provision for this population. And so we will be providing the housing and the safe space and the basic life skills of living in a home and how to work together and be together in a home setting like that. But all of our youth will have the opportunity to participate in those programs and services that are tried and true through IYG. And we will have a staff member, at least one, if not more, from IYG coming to the house to provide some of those things in-house. But we'll have that kind of back-and-forth partnership, and which makes it so wonderful in that we're in walking distance from each other so that we're easily accessible.
Leanne, in terms of the church's commitment, how is the church going to define success with Trinity Haven? I mean, what outcomes are you looking for here?
Sure. I'll explain that the church helped found Trinity Haven. Mm-hmm. It is now an independent organization. So I'm the president of the board of directors of Trinity Haven, its own institution. So we have several ways that we hope to define success. One is that we would like for 80% of our residents to graduate to safe and stable independent housing with the skills to sustain life successfully in that housing. That's perhaps the most important measure.
Are there other benchmarks that you're going to look at besides the, if they can get out on their own, which is, let's face it, the hope for every parent, but that they launch successfully. In terms of, because if Sarah's story is any indication, you're going to be dealing with it at this home some young people who have been through incredibly traumatic experiences. So I would assume that at the very least there's also going to be an immediate benchmark that you're going to try to stop the bleeding.
Yes, and our program model calls for our young residents to experience, improvements in several areas, including self-sufficiency, the ability to create a safe space for oneself, improved wellness, which includes both mental and physical health, the ability to advocate for oneself, and the ability to create a community around yourself that includes mostly healthy relationships and to learn how to deal with those that are less than healthy.
And again, Jenny, we're looking at possibly sometime this summer.
Yes.
For it to open.
I mean,
what's the earliest possible date?
That's the million-dollar question, right?
Okay.
It's very difficult to navigate that. I think anyone who's ever gone through home renovations could say, oh, gosh, we anticipated opening by July 1, but something happened when we opened up that wall, and now we're looking at July 30th. And so we are being as flexible as we possibly can with that target date, but know that we will open as soon as possible when exactly the right time is that we're ready to do so.
We are talking about Trinity Haven, a new home for homeless LGBTQ youth in Indianapolis. My guests are Jenny White, Trinity Haven's founding executive director, Chris Paulson, CEO of Indiana Youth Group, and Trinity Haven board members Sarah Al-Rajabi and Leanne Hirschman. If you want to join the conversation, Please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or track us down on social media. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us.
Support for No Limits comes from listeners who donate to WFYI and from Comcast Business, providing a gig speed network and gig fueled applications that can help businesses go beyond. More at ComcastBusiness.com. Comcast Business, beyond fast. And from Indiana Design Center, 15 showrooms, 20 design professionals, 40 kitchen and bath vignettes. More information at IndianaDesignCenter.com. And from Procore's Fiduciary Advisors, an independent advisory firm dedicated to helping employers improve retirement plans to support their employees and achieve organizational goals. Procore's people-focused, process-driven. More at ProcoresADV.com. Stay with us as No Limits continues, and if you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter.
Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about Trinity Haven. It is a new home opening for homeless LGBTQ youth here in Indianapolis. We're also talking really about the broader challenges of acceptance and safety that many of these young people face. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Jenny White, Trinity Haven's founding executive director, Chris Paulson, who is CEO of Indiana Youth Group, and Trinity Haven board members Sarah Al-Rajavi, I'll get that right before the program's over, I promise, Sarah, and Leanne Hirschman. So we've talked about really the situation that these young people, and I don't want to in any way signal that I'm disparaging the work that the Trinity Haven has done, but I want to pick up on a comment I think Chris made at the top of the show when she talked about the climate here in Indiana. Yeah, part of what Trinity Haven does is intercede or intervene after tremendous damage has been done to a young life, when it seems to me that we ought to talk a little bit about what we could do to stop having that damage be done in the first place. So what changes would we need to say? That this time it was Jenny who was nodding first, so I'm going to go with her.
Thanks so much.
Sure.
I think that honestly having conversations just like this more often and letting people know that if the folks that are listening are in a precarious situation, that there are people who do actually care about them and there are ways to reach out for our assistance. But to those other folks who are listening who feel compelled to do good in the world, to put action behind their feelings of supportiveness of this population or any population who's experiencing these barriers, to take action, to spread that word so that we can normalize the conversation. We can normalize the conversation around pronouns and respecting someone's identity, that they have gone through the process of finding that out for themselves, and when they are able to state that and ask to be addressed in a certain way, that we meet them where they are and then go with them on that journey. Sometimes that exploration takes interesting turns, but as advocates for this population, we know that it's not always clean and tidy. Self-advocacy can be really messy. But creating that safe space and that brave space for people to have those difficult conversations around understanding and seeking to understand, because that journey can also take its toll on folks who, gosh, I just don't understand. Gosh, I just don't understand. Well, let's talk about it again. And to have the patience to do that over and over and sometimes over and over again. So normalizing those conversations that are uncomfortable or could be uncomfortable, I think, is a big part of just that mind shift, so that we have less marginalization, particularly of our youth who are trying to identify who they are and then sharing that with the people that they would hope would care about them the most in their own family units.
Chris, I may be putting words in your mouth, and I hope you'll push back if I am, but by climate, I wondered if you weren't referring, and I'll just say it because the show is called No Limits for a reason, that, you know, for the past decade or so in this state, we have had a prolonged debate about what rights LGBTQ mm-hmm. citizens are entitled to, what protections, legal protections, they're entitled to. Is that the climate that you were referring to, and what's the effect on that of young people?
I think that's the larger climate, but I think climates also happen in churches. They happen in school systems. We're seeing that right now in Hamilton Southeast, where they're talking about policy to protect transgender students, and mm-hmm. it's not a pretty conversation. And you know, that conversation will continue tomorrow night at a board meeting. When transgender and non-binary and all LGBTQ youth see those conversations and people saying out loud, we do not respect those youth, that has the opposite effect of what a school system should have to protect and nurture students. That is making the suicide rate higher. Things like that, adults need to talk to think about their words before they say them and how those words affect youth. So I think it's not just the overall political climate. It's climates in different mm-hmm. places. And I think people can educate themselves, take the time to do research and try to understand what these youth are going through instead of just judging them.
Sarah, we've talked about, obviously, the atmosphere at home and the relationship with your parents. What was it like when you were going to school? I mean, in that environment, did you feel accepted or do you feel isolated? And admittedly, you know, my theory has always been that there are only two people who are happy in any high school in America, the captain of the football team and the head cheerleader, and everyone else is miserable. But go ahead, please.
Well, I went to a small charter school in Indy, and my school was fairly accepting, and I think that that's why and how I learned about IYG, and we were able to kind of explore ourselves a little bit at school, and mm-hmm. I think that that was pretty helpful for me, but there definitely were some times when, you know, some of the teachers and definitely some of the students were not very accepting. But I think more so there was times when the people in, like, my neighborhood mm-hmm. and people around, like, the parents and mm. more of the community was less accepting than the overall school.
In what ways were they not accepting?
There was a lot of slurs. Mm-hmm. We had a GSA at my school, and I think IYG actually helped start the GSA at my school. Mm-hmm. And
we probably ought to break that down for people who don't. Gay straight.
Yeah, the Gay Straight Alliance.
Yeah.
I think IYG came in and helped start that. So there was a staff member from IYG that came and talked with some of the students and some of the staff members to help start that. And then through that, I think some parents got a little bit angry mm-hmm. that, you know, students were trying to make their children gay. Mm-hmm. And there was some parents that were angry about that. And then I think there were some teachers that kind of gave some, like, side eye, like, little, but they never really made outright comments. I think it was more of, like, parents and some other students that were kind of like, let's stay away from those students because they're going to infect us with their gay.
We are talking about Trinity Haven, a new home for homeless LGBTQ youth that is opening in Indianapolis soon. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Track us down on Twitter at wfyi. Or do what a listener named Ann has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Ann, you're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to talk a little bit about the guidance that the Obama administration issued that Trump canceled, because most people don't understand how that works exactly. The guidance that Obama issued was not just something that they studied and decided what should be done. It actually is based on the court cases. If you read the guidance, it goes through different court cases and cites different court cases for everything they say. And the primary guidance, I'm in Brownsburg, and the primary guidance in Brownsburg, and you may recall the incident with the orchestra teacher a year and a half ago, the primary guidance here matches precisely what that guidance said from Obama. And because it's actually based on the courts, it's really nothing for Trump to cancel. It still applies. It's still valid, even though I suppose in some sense it's not valid, but it's still valid because nothing changes any of the court cases.
Thanks very much for the call and the point. Chris, can you elaborate?
That is true. The guidance is guidance, but unfortunately a lot of schools have taken that to mean that they don't have to protect LGBTQ youth. So rolling back that guidance has changed how schools are addressing students. Unfortunately, you know, that's the reality of it, and we need to keep working as communities and as individuals to get the correct policies in place to protect all students, including LGBTQ students.
Leanne, I mean, this is one of those cases, and it seems like we're in a lot of them these days, where while there are these massive political debates and all of that, at the community level, it comes down to people just having to take care of other people at some level and try to meet their needs. What do you anticipate the challenges are going to be with Trinity Haven, that places other than writing a check that people could plug in?
Thanks. First of all, I want to say we've enjoyed extraordinary community support for Trinity Haven. And that's been really delightful to see, and I hope it's a strong message for LGBTQ youth across the state that not just Trinity Haven, but several supporting organizations throughout the city see them and love them and accept them just the way that they are. In terms of challenges, I mean, I think starting a not-for-profit is always full of challenges. I think that I have learned that stereotypes around LGBTQ people are alive. Mm-hmm. So are stereotypes around homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
So I think one challenge is going to be fighting those stereotypes by the way that we live and the way that we act. If people want to support Trinity Haven aside from making a financial contribution, they can spread the word about us. And as Jenny said, they can make a safe space for some of these difficult conversations at home, in their workplace, in their schools, in their churches, and beyond.
So, Sarah, I'm going to ask you this, and again, push me back if I go too far, but I want you to go back to those really difficult conversations with your parents. What did you want to hear from them at that moment? Because there probably are some kids and some parents who are listening to this program right now who are on the edge of having that kind of conversation.
I think what I wanted to hear was that there was nothing wrong with me. That even though I was different, that I was valid. And that because I am different, I am special, and I am going to be able to use my differences to relate to many people and to make a difference. And I think that what I wanted was that reassurance that that they cared and that they didn't want to change me.
And that's what, that would have helped.
Yeah.
That would have helped.
I just wanted to feel like they loved me no matter what. And I think that over the years, I'm 25 now, so we've been able to repair some of our relationship. And I think that over the years, I've realized that, you know, my parents do love me. But I think that at that time, I think that even though we were both going through a difficult time, I think that I just needed them to tell me that they loved me.
Is that, Chris, you're nodding again. Is that what you hear over and over again?
It is. Youth need to know that they're loved and that they'll be protected as they figure out who they are. And that is what IYG tries to provide, is a safe place that those youth can know that, like Sarah said, that they're valid as they are, and that they shouldn't have to try to be someone else, that they can be their true, authentic selves, and that is enough.
Jenny, how are you going to go about doing that with these young people? I mean, sending that message at Trinity Haven.
Well, we will open our arms with love and support. We will have boundaries and chores and all the things that what would normally happen in a home. I say normally with quotes for people who can't see me on the radio. But understanding that that everyone is unique and valid in their own authentic selves. And it's our duty and our responsibility to treat everyone with dignity and respect. And so we do that through modeling appropriate behavior and through celebrating life's wonderfulness and crying through those challenges and things that, that get in our way, and working through that together so that every youth that is coming through our program knows that they're not alone. Whether it's something really, really challenging, or I just kind of had a day that didn't go so well, or all of the wonderful things that will happen as we explore life together. And so having that opportunity to share that with each other amongst themselves as peers and with the staff who will be there to support that will, my hope is, create that and continue that safe space for folks as they move on.
And we're just about out of time.
Sure.
If you want to give them the URL a couple more times if they do want to support Trinity Haven,
how do they go about
doing that?
Yes, you can visit www.trinityhavenindy.org. Again, that's trinityhavenindy.org.
And that will have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my guests, Jenny White, Trinity Haven's founding executive director, Chris Paulson, CEO of Indiana Youth Group, and Trinity Haven board members Sarah Al-Rajabi and Leanne Hirschman, for what has been a lively and provocative conversation. Particularly, Sarah, I want to thank you for sharing your story so honestly. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator Scott McAllister. Technical Producers Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.